Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is February 28th, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 164, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, Shelton Ehrlich's package boy. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM.
Pew, 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 pew. Pew, 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 pew.
Macobserver.com.
That's like the best sound effect we have, I think.
Oh, it is indeed. And speaking of sound effects, you can follow me on Twitter, which actually is completely devoid of sound effects. At twitter.com/DMOBrian. It's Brian with a Y.
And
Twitter should have sound effects.
Well, you know, I guess it depends on which application you're using to view tweets. You might have some sound effects.
Well, that's true, yeah.
Or and I occasionally make up my own for tweets that I read.
Fair enough.
And speaking of vague sound effects, as long as we're going with segues you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/jgamet. That's J-G-A-M-E-T. And, yeah, you can see more of my senseless ramblings online.
Sweet. And, you know, speaking of senseless, this is our third podcast in February. What's up with that?
It's probably a sign of the coming apocalypse.
Yeah, I've been watching Supernatural on DVD, trying to catch up because I do like the show. And just finished season 4 last night, and the whole season was about the unlocking of the various seals that imprison Lucifer. So surely us doing three podcasts in 1 month is the breaking of a seal.
It probably is. So let me publicly apologize for releasing all of the demon spawn from hell. We're really sorry, gang.
Oh, good Lord. All right. So let's dig up some fodder for the context machine.
Okay, I think that sounds like a great idea. Apple axes sexy iPhone apps from the App Store, the Associated Press is ready for the iPad, and Apple trademarked Magic Trackpad, which was clearly a move to protect a name no one else wanted.
Apple recently began removing iPhone and iPod Touch apps from its App Store that offered sexually suggestive content. And they didn't bother to let developers or consumers know the change was coming. Phil Schiller, Apple's Senior Vice President of Worldwide Product Marketing, told developers and App Store shoppers after the fact, quote, "We were getting customer complaints from women who found the content getting too degrading and objectionable, as well as parents who were upset with what their kids were able to see," unquote. Apps that show women in bikinis, oh my, or underwear, oh my, or apps that let users undress women have been removed from the App Store, but not every app that fits in those categories was actually removed. For instance, the Sports Illustrated swimsuit app and Playboy lingerie app are both still available. Mr. Schiller explained that discrepancy by saying, and we're not making this up, quote, "The difference is this is a well-known company with previously published material available broadly in a well-accepted format," unquote. And, you know, we mess with a lot of quotes here on our show.
We didn't mess with this one.
Didn't even mess with that one a little bit. At least some developers aren't happy with Apple's explanation, especially since some of the apps that were pulled were making money, shock of shocks, after Mr. Schiller offered up the company's reasoning behind culling girly apps. Apple added a new explicit category to the App Store for developers, but apps with the new tag haven't yet appeared for customers.
And the Associated Press, commonly called the AP, made two related announcements on Friday that pertain to Apple's world. The first was that it was creating a new division called AP Gateway that will be responsible for developing the company's online and mobile business model. The second was the first product that division announced, which was an unnamed subscription app for Apple's as-yet-not-shipping iPad product line. While Apple has been recruiting newspapers to whom the AP syndicates the content generated by its vast network of reporters for the iPad, the AP is easily the largest news organization to have actually signed onto the platform. There are a number of things that remain unclear, like pricing of the app's subscription and how it will work with the existing network of syndicating newspapers, but we expect the announcement to be merely the first of a large group of news publications that flock to the iPad.
In an effort to remind the world of those distant times when the company actually made the occasional mistake, Apple applied for a trademark this week for the name Magic Trackpad. It's not clear if this will be applied to existing trackpads or on its portable lineup, or if Apple intends to release a standalone trackpad device, but the branding would, unfortunately, be consistent with the Magic Mouse, or even be consistent with the Magic Mouse the company launched in 2009. And that sound means it is time for the Context Machine. This is the Context Machine within the Context Machine for the Context Machine podcast, where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on.
Wait, what was the metal thing about the Context Machine?
Yeah, it's the Context Machine.
Oh, okay, got it.
Of the Context Machine.
Got it.
Got it? Got it? Got some notes there?
I think so. Wait, Context Machine. Yeah, I've got it now. Okay.
You know, let's actually start off with the Context Machine by explaining my title. Only because the guy's a coot.
Yeah. And there's a group of people out there that right now are thinking, who?
Yeah, Shelton. So my title was Shelton Ehrlich's baggage boy. Shelton Ehrlich is an Apple shareholder, and as far as I've been able to determine, a shareholder in several other Silicon Valley companies, who shows up at especially Apple's shareholder meetings and basically talks a bunch of crazy talk.
Yeah, oftentimes not even related to what the company does.
Well, yeah,
sort of loosely related.
Loosely related, yeah. So Apple did have a shareholder meeting. We didn't mention it in the news because really there wasn't a lot of news that actually came out, and nothing that we really wanted to talk about except for Shelton Ehrlich, and because he was going on last year, he was going on about how the room was full of socialists who wanted to make us all slaves to the government. And this time he went on a rant about environmentalism being a religion with no facts behind it, and how Al Gore was wrong about the ice caps melting. He's a character and a half.
So he's the guy that takes shareholder meetings and turns them into like those family get-togethers where you have the one uncle that everyone... Just yeah,
he is that one uncle. Yeah, he's a character. I watched him. I've watched him at a couple of past shareholder meetings, and he sort of totters up to the mic. Anyway, he is rabid in his conviction that everybody else is crazy. Basically, that's kind of what it comes down to.
Now, doesn't it work like? The majority is always sane?
Well, by definition, yeah, the majority does unfortunately tend to be deemed sane.
Okay.
Sometimes, unfortunately.
Yeah, just checking for clarification.
Yeah. All right, so let's actually do our Context Machine now.
Right.
Let's start with the sexy app thing.
Okay, so the whole sexy app thing. I've seen a lot of people complaining about this happening, and I totally understand because it was kind of out of the blue. No one saw this coming. It just all of a sudden applications are disappearing.
Well, Apple handled it poorly.
They handled it poorly. And, Yeah, that they could have given people a heads up. People still would have complained. However, they would have at least been able to say, look, we told you we're getting ready to do this.
Yeah, Apple should have given notice to developers and consumers saying that there's going to be a change in the way we handle apps that have sexually suggestive content. Now, Apple was already basically rejecting applications or apps that had sexually explicit content. Right, so those apps have long been gone, but now we're talking about apps with women in bikinis and women in various states of lingerie wearing. And if they had said that a change was coming, given everybody a couple of weeks, would have given them time to come up with this whole explicit category content, and then told developers that we're pulling all these apps and you can resubmit them under this new category.
That would have been totally reasonable.
That would have been a way to handle this. That's assuming, of course, that there's any justification whatsoever for Apple catering to the subset of people who had a problem with this in the first place.
Yeah. Now, regardless of whether or not there's justification, I've heard a lot of people complaining, saying Apple didn't have a right to do this. It's censorship, and it's a violation of free speech.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. This is Apple's own store. They can sell whatever they want.
Yeah, government censor, companies do not.
Right.
That's actually the way that works.
That's exactly how that works.
Not at all talking about whether or not companies have too much power. It's kind of a separate issue. But we have no legal right to porn on the App Store.
Sad but true.
Apple has no legal obligation to offer us porn on the App Store.
Right. And I needed to bring that up because I think it's an important distinction, and a lot of people are missing that part of this whole equation, and they
quite frankly, they're just as stupid as the people that wanted this stuff pulled. And I'm not going to mince any words with this. This is an issue that I think is completely ridiculous. I think that Apple had already drawn a enough defined line on this particular issue. I'm personally okay with Apple not wanting iTunes Store being a store
for
actual porn. But the stuff they were offering is just not porn. And if parents were having a problem with what their kids were able to see, then they need to do a better job of controlling their kids. And I'm tired of the world being downgraded for the sake of parents who expect everybody else to pay the price for what they want their kids to see or not see. I'm extremely tense about this.
Yeah, I don't like the way this whole thing played out. And even knowing Apple can sell whatever they want, and that's their thing, but just the way this played out, I'm not happy with it.
It was handled poorly. Now, all that said, I actually do think that there is. That certainly makes a lot of sense to have the explicit category.
Oh yeah, I agree.
And I think that it's fantastic for Apple to offer parents controls for what their parents can see. There are existing parental controls, and I'm assuming that the explicit category, of course, will have more power over this explicit category.
Yeah, so what I'm thinking is maybe with the explicit category, not only will kids that fall under the parental control stuff not be able to purchase that content, they won't be able to see it when they do searches.
Yeah, maybe.
And I'm okay with that, simply because there are things that some parents don't want their kids seeing. And
not
so if there's a way for them to control that, great for them.
Yes.
But they need to take responsibility and actually do that control.
Yes.
Or
and
enforce that control.
If you're a parent and you think that I'm wrong and you want to tell me about how hard it is being a parent in a modern world, feel free to do so.
Yeah. I appreciate all the work parents have to go through to raise their kids.
Absolutely. And it is difficult. It is difficult in a world where information is available so freely to have certainly as much control over one's kids as generations in the past have had. Unfortunately, though, that is the reality. There is less control available to people in a world where information is available as freely as it is on the internet.
That's true.
It's a reality, and it's something that we as a society have to adjust to.
Well, we have to adjust every time a new communication medium is created.
Yeah.
So, prior to dealing with the internet, okay, people had to deal with HBO and Cinemax.
Well, people had to deal with magazines being published. When the old hand crank movie things. Right?
The first movies that was created was actually porno. Now, by today's standards, it would be like, late night TV.
It'd be something that you'd see on, the Lifetime Channel or ABC Family or I don't know. Porn. The definition of porn is constantly, of course, changing.
Right.
We had paintings by fantastic people and sculptures by fantastic renowned artists of naked people that today's prudes want to cover up with blankets.
Now, how much Shakespeare have you read?
I've only read a few plays. I think I'm familiar with many more, but I've only read a few of them.
Okay. The reason I'm asking is because the amount of sexual content that's in Shakespearean plays is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, a lot of it is lost on current generations because you have to understand the vernacular and the slang from when those plays were written. But, I mean, they are very explicit.
Right.
Or how about the Canterbury Tales from Geoffrey Chaucer?
Sure.
I mean, there's
lots of sexual innuendo in that.
Oh, not just innuendo. But, yeah, there's a lot of innuendo and a lot of blatant sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So these issues are not new. And,
No. Yeah. It's there is always a standard, and that standard is perpetually changing. And, I will point out that I may well sound like I'm on two sides of this fence in that I don't think that Apple needed to do anything more, but I'm actually quite happy with the introduction of the explicit category. They handled that aspect of it wrong. I don't know. The whole thing was just kind of one of those rare stumbling things that Apple actually does.
You know, part of the problem is that Apple handled this the way they handle all of their products as well, which is you don't say anything until it happens.
Right.
And sometimes you do need to say ahead of time what's going to happen.
And right. This and of course, is one you of know, if situations. They had just told developers would have immediately complained to the press. So, there would have been no just telling developers.
Right. And like I said earlier, had Apple given everyone a heads up, there still would have been this whole uproar about the whole thing. But it would have been an uproar about Apple choosing to change a policy as opposed to an uproar about Apple making what appears to be a knee-jerk reaction to some complaints.
Yes.
And I would rather have to deal with the as a company with people being upset about changing a policy as opposed to the knee-jerk reaction thing.
Well, another thought just occurred to me, Jeff. Apple has built its current success on the notion of not trying to please everybody. Correct?
Right.
Right. They basically they target a market that they want. They develop the product that they want to address that market. And if some people don't like it, they're welcome to shop elsewhere. Well, why?
And yet, that's not what's happening here.
Yeah, yeah. There's a subset of people that were unhappy, and Apple did a knee-jerk thing to please them. I don't know. that entitlement. Actually, it's the entitlement of some of the complaining people that I think has me the most on tilt about this. The entitlement that the entire rest of the world needs to bow down to what their sensibilities are. That's actually positively what has me the most on tilt about this whole thing. I hate entitlement.
Yeah, it's...
Arrgh.
I don't like the idea of a minority being able, or any group really, being able to tell me what I should and should not be able to see or read or listen to.
Yes.
And I don't care if it's, well, actually I do care if it's coming from the government, because then that gets into the scary censorship thing. But, I mean, for this instance, I don't care if it's the government or if it's a company, I really don't like the idea of an organization saying, well, you know, this is what you can and can't have. And when the company is making that decision based on a subset of people, I don't like seeing that kind of precedent set, because Apple could be opening themselves up to all kinds of groups of people trying to dictate what content is available at the App Store.
Right. Right. Of course, you know, Apple is not one to bow to a precedent.
No.
I mean, you know, let's say some fringe group that thinks that there should be no animals as pets ever starts complaining about an application with a dog in it. Well, I mean, you know, Apple's not going to bow to that. I mean, I don't think Apple really cares about whether or not it's establishing a precedent.
Yeah, of course. A couple weeks ago, if we had said, you know, if someone was upset about applications showing swimsuits, Apple wouldn't care about that. But it turns out they actually did. So who knows?
Right.
And I know I'm kind of taking that to the extreme here, but you know, who knows what other groups are out there that are going to come up with some weird complaint that Apple decides to listen to.
It's true. And before we bag on Apple for the magic thing, let's talk first about the we'll separate our Apple bashing here with another story, which I think is one where I really want to heap praise on Steve and Apple for, and that's the newspaper thing.
You know, I'm excited to see what happens with the newspaper industry over the next couple years.
You know, I am too. I personally, Sean King of Your Mac Life tweeted something about how he didn't think that Steve Jobs believed for a second I can't remember how he worded it. But that kind of set me off on this this path. Something to the effect of basically whether or not the iPad could save news. Oh no, it was that Apple believes that newspapers are important to a democracy.
Oh right, okay.
And Sean had tweeted that he didn't think that Steve thought that for a second, and he and I went back and forth a couple of times, and. The short version to me on this is that, firstly, I very strongly believe that a free press is absolutely necessary for an informed electorate, and therefore an important part of maintaining democracy.
I am going to have to jump firmly into your camp on that. I think that the founding fathers of the United States clearly saw the importance of having, in essence, a watchdog group that's independent of the government, which is why we see freedom of the press listed in the Bill of Rights to the U.S. Constitution.
Well, actually, to be fair, though, the Bill of Rights are there because that wasn't included in the original Constitution.
Right.
Thomas Jefferson, I believe, freaked out and said you needed to have these things.
Yeah, and from what I understand, and of course we're going to have some political historians show my ignorance later on, and I'm okay with that. The way the Constitution was written, it was designed to create a framework that restricts the government. And since there wasn't anything in the Constitution saying the government could control the press, that meant they could not control the press. But there was the whole freak out thing where people were saying, no, we need to list these specific rights. And so then that was added in.
Right. Because the Bill of Rights is not the Bill of Rights per se. It's actually a list of the first 10 amendments.
Right.
That were accepted into the Constitution and as important rights. I mean, so it's not. I'm not really saying that very well. The Bill of Rights is not part of the original Constitution labeled under the Bill of Rights. It is instead the first 10 amendments that were added to the Constitution in order to define the citizenry's rights.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
That right. I think that's a totally reasonable way to describe the Bill of Rights.
So, with all that in mind, what we have going on today, and we've talked a little bit about this on previous shows, where local newspapers in particular are hurting as their bread and one of their bread and butters, one of the things that paid the bills before, which was the local want ads, have effectively gone to the internet, in particular Craigslist.
Yeah, you're right. And I can say that the whole one ads thing is essentially dead from my perspective and from my experience. If you want to sell something quickly, you go to Craigslist. You don't pay for an ad in the one ads.
No, not at all. And that's really hurt local newspapers. And so, you know, the price of this fantastically wonderful service, and it's funny, I heard a story recently about Craig, the founder of Craigslist, who he's mortified that his idea of you know, easy access ads has actually hurt the newspaper industry. That was never his intent.
Which it's kind of funny when you think about it, because he created the perfect replacement for newspaper one ads.
Right.
So, right. Yeah.
Right. So we have, you know, on top of that, we have the problem of content being the internet advertising does not pay for the content that's being displayed. So right. The advertising that newspapers got, you know, effectively, basically, online publishers are penalized for their accountability. That's I mean, and we don't need to go too far on that. But Dave Hamilton and I have talked about this for years. That you know, if we had circulation of a print magazine that had the same kind of numbers that our online publication has, we'd be probably bringing in 10, 20 times as much money.
We'd all be driving fancy cars.
We'd all be driving fancy cars, yes. and this is true for everybody. You know, the online advertising market does not bring in the same kinds of money per eyeball that the print world still does. And the print world is a fraction of what it used to be. So there's this whole massive shift in the economics of publishing the news. And, you know, no one's been able to figure this stuff out yet. You know, very few publications sell subscription access to their online sites. And, very little content is truly being paid for. And if this is extrapolated out to its theoretical end game, we lose all of this stuff that we consume for free now, because no one's paying for it.
Well, one thing we need to keep in mind is that even though we have well over a decade of legitimate online news under our belts, just as an industry, we are still in the early, early development stages of this whole online real-time news world. And so it's going to take a while for companies to really get this sorted out, and especially when you take into consideration we're talking about companies that have been producing news in a format that is much slower than online.
Right.
And if you follow back, though, we've had the same issues. I mean, we've had to deal as people with going from smoke signals or carriers taking messages by voice
and people who literally hollered out the news.
Yeah, the town criers.
We
end up with the printing press. And now we've gone from town criers and people having to physically write to duplicate news to being able to print news. And that changed how people perceived information. And people at that time were freaking out about information overload.
Mm-hmm. And radio, of course, was going to kill newspapers. It didn't.
Right. And then television
is going to kill radio and newspapers. It didn't.
Right.
And the internet is going to kill radio, television, and newspapers and magazines. And it hasn't yet. And it probably won't.
But I don't think it will. I think it will change what we see from the print and television and radio side.
Well, actually, there is one thing, Jeff, that I think is very much in danger. You know, because I think that your APs and your Reuters, although it wouldn't surprise me if that eventually becomes AP Reuters or Reuters AP. Right?
Oh, I hadn't thought about that, but I can see that happening.
You know, and I think that we'll still have, you know, the New York Times and the Washington Post and unfortunately USA Today and maybe unfortunately, you know, some of the other dumbed down national newspapers. But I think we're going to have your national newspapers and we're going to have your international newspapers. But what I think is really in danger of being lost are the local newspapers and the local beats, because there's no money in it.
You know, and the interesting thing from my perspective is that the local papers are in a much better position to adapt to the new information technology compared to the big players like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, because they're smaller publications. They can potentially be more nimble, and so they should be able to adapt to this new technology and new distribution medium faster.
And some of them may, Jeff, but I think that a lot of them won't. And what you lose with that is you lose coverage of local issues like corruption, like city council meetings, what the mayor's office is doing, what the county commissioner is doing, those kinds of articles, that kind of news coverage is very important to the local electorate. And if local newspapers can't make some kind of shift, we're just going to lose all that stuff. And you know, I know that a lot of bloggers like to fancy themselves as being replacements for local newspapers, but it ain't so.
You know,
it's an augmentation, but it's not a replacement. When you have a blogger, like, you know, if it's just me writing something and I don't have any kind of, you know, editorial process besides what I think it should be, it's not the same as having a reporter that reports to an editor who reports to an editor.
You know, it's funny that you bring this up, because you know I go to the Conference on World Affairs in Boulder every year. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many just amazing presentations that are given, and it's free, and it's just worth going. So come out and let's go.
All right.
And we would have a blast. And Andy Anatko speaks every year, so we'll go hang out with Andy and we'll have a great time.
But, fantastic.
Okay, so, but my point is, one of the sessions that I went to at last year's Conference on World Affairs was about the changing media and how journalism is having to do this major change to accommodate the new distribution method. And one of the things that came up was the fact that as the smaller local papers go away, the accountability at that level goes away too. And so we lose the coverage of local politicians.
What we've just been talking about.
Yeah. Everything that we've just been talking about was exactly what was brought up in that whole session that I went to. And the answer at the time was, no one knows how to fix it yet, but hopefully we will. And I think
that is go ahead.
Okay, so that's not the answer that we want, but what I'm hoping is that as publications adapt to our new technology, and especially when we start seeing more products that allow us to get that instant delivery wherever we go, that we'll be able to come up with a model that allows that local investigative journalism to continue, and we won't lose that accountability.
Well, and that is the perfect segue to why we're talking about this on the Apple Context Machine.
Oh my God, I just realized we hadn't gotten to that part yet.
We hadn't gotten to that part yet. And what I think is the case, and you know, we know that that Steve Jobs has supposedly said this is the iPad is the most important product that he's worked on yet. Right?
Right.
And I think that we've also had stories coming out that basically Steve felt that the iPad could save newspapers. Now, putting all that together, I personally feel very strongly that Steve Jobs does see the iPad as a potential savior for newspapers on both the local, national, and international stage. And that if consumers move to consuming a lot of their news on an iPad and or the iPhone through subscriptions to these newspapers, that could be the revenue model that allows them to survive. And I think that very much fits within Steve's hubris, and that... I think that he is just cocky and talented enough to think that he, in fact, could be the savior of this industry that couldn't save itself, just like they did with the music industry.
You know, I don't see Apple as the sole savior of the news industry. However, I see Apple as the company that opens the door and lays the foundation. And I'm okay with that, because if the iPad turns out to be that great of a product for news delivery, cool, because I'm planning on getting one right away, and that's probably how I'm going to consume most of my news information anyhow. And if it creates a new market where newspapers can deliver electronically viably and profitably, then hopefully we'll see all kinds of devices that allow people to get their news that way. So I'm thinking positive about this, even though I don't think the iPad will be the sole savior of the news industry.
I think that it could be. And I don't know. And I appreciate what you're saying about laying the foundation. I don't think that the iPad or iBook Store or the iPhone are going to be the only way that people are going to consume news by any stretch of the imagination. But I think that I don't know. Maybe we're actually both on the same page on this, in that the iPad could represent the sea change that the industry has needed in order to turn online mobile viewership into actual money.
And I'm actually okay with paying for my news content online.
Well, I think we're going to have to if we want to keep getting that news.
Now, the problem we're going to have, and I believe you're right, we will have to pay if we expect to continue to get that news. The problem we have is that the internet has created a sense of entitlement, and there's a substantial number of people out there that expect they should be able to get all of this content that takes a lot of money to create. For free.
Yeah, for free without ads, you know, there is a huge disconnect. There are definitely a lot of people who have that entitlement. However, there were also a growing number of people who had a sense of entitlement about getting free music the same way.
Right.
And the iTunes Store changed that.
Right. And of course, there's still a large number of people out there that have that same sense of entitlement. But you're right. The iTunes Store changed how a significant number of people view music delivery.
And view digital online consumption of music.
Yes. And just like with news, I am okay paying for my music online. Even though I would like to see songs cost less, it's not stopping me from buying the music because I have an easy way to legitimately acquire music. And so I buy content from the iTunes Store on a very regular basis.
Fair enough. I don't. I still prefer to get my music on CDs. And I don't like paying $10 for a digital download.
Let's not
devolve in that direction.
Oh, right. Because I was about to take us way off in left field on that. So thank you for pulling me back in on that one.
We can do it again later.
Yeah. So, all right. So I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Do you have a subscription to a print paper?
Yes. The Wall Street Journal.
Okay.
Oh, no. To a print paper. I do not. No.
Okay. Okay.
I have a digital description. The subscription, even.
Okay. Yeah. All right. And I haven't had a subscription to a print paper for well over 10 years. And for me, the decision was very easy because I was already getting my news online. By the time my paper would show up, the news that I was getting in print was at least 24 hours old, and in many cases, it was news that I had read at least 48 hours before seeing the newspaper.
True, but even still today, there's a lot of news that even if it's 24 hours old, is more in depth.
That's true. And okay, so taking that whole notion of a lot of that print news is going to be more in depth, and being able to get news faster, that's why I'm willing to pay for an online subscription. Because if I can get news fast, plus I can also get that in-depth coverage along with it, that's, to me, like the best of both worlds. Because I can have all that extra information, I don't have to wait for things, and I can take it with me anywhere I go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I am totally ready to be paying for my news subscriptions. And in this case, it'll be on my iPad because that's what's coming out soon and that's what I'll have.
Right. Right. And on that note, let's talk about today's sponsor.
That's right. Our sponsor today is Citrix again, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. GoTo Assist Express.
And for those of you that don't know what GoTo Express is, it's
Express.
I'm sorry, what?
GoTo Assist Express.
Oh, see, I was talking about the abridged version, which doesn't have so many words in the name. All right. So this is a service that lets you remotely connect to someone else's computer. And as the assist part indicates, help them with their computer. So you can do troubleshooting and training and things like that without actually having to be in front of someone else's computer.
Right. It's a way to control someone else's computer with their approval, of course.
That's an important point, with their approval.
Right. This is not some kind of hacking tool. This is something that two people need to agree to actually do and have it happen. And it's a great way to be able to help someone else with their problem without having to, drive over to their car or try to, walk them through over the phone. Have you ever done that, by the way? Have you ever tried to, you're on the phone with your friend and, okay, are you in the Finder? Are you sure? Okay, upper left-hand corner, does it say Finder?
this actually...
Okay, what does it actually say? Now, just tell me what the menu bar actually says.
I lived that actually yesterday. As recently as yesterday. It was actually with my dad. I was helping him with a problem he was having. He didn't understand how to convert a file that he needed in a different format. So I'm walking him through the process. And unfortunately, I wasn't at my computer, because if I had been, I actually would have used this, because I could have shown him what to do, even though, you know, we're in different cities. But right. I was on my phone, so I had to walk him through it. And there was one point where what I was telling him to do simply did not work, no matter what I tried.
And it wasn't. If he had GoTo Assist Express,
I would have known that instead of being in the Finder, he was running AppleWorks. And so he was using the open dialogue in AppleWorks.
Right.
As opposed to being in a Finder window.
Right. So if you have a product like GoTo Assist Express, which again allows you to control a remote computer, with, you know, basically the recipient has to only to open something that and agree to what's going to happen on their end, and it allows you to basically get that total control without having to be there.
Right, and it's a secure connection that the person whose computer will be controlled, they have to explicitly allow this. So, like you said, it won't be a hack, and that. I think that's a very cool thing.
Yeah, it is a very cool thing. And what they're doing is they're letting you try it for 30 days. And you can do so by going to gotoassist.com/machine. That's our special page.
So what was that again? Gotoassist.com/machine?
gotoassist.com/machine for context machine.
Well, that's very clever.
Yeah, so if you go there, you will let them know that we sent you.
And you can try the service for 30 days for free.
Yep, you can try it for 30 days for free, which is super cool.
Yeah, well, free is my favorite price.
This is actually almost science fiction-y stuff.
Yeah, it pretty much is.
Just about. You know, it used to be such a pain to even, you know, Unix, of course, you could always log into another Unix machine and control something via the command line. But, you know, and then we had the VPN stuff, and there have been products on the market to allow this sort of thing for a long time. But this latest iteration just makes it so easy for people on both ends.
And that's easy is an cool important part. Word.
Exactly. The easy part is the important thing, because, you know, when you're talking about trying to set up a VPN client on someone's computer that, you know, when they're a novice user or, you know, just not all that savvy, it's
scary.
Kind of a pain in the butt. So gotoassist.com/machine.
I'm glad you tossed that URL out again. I was about to say, hey, Brian, what's that URL?
All right. And we have one more thing we want to talk about in the context machine. And that, of course, was the...
Apple's best name ever.
I don't like the magic stuff. You know, I'm okay with Apple describing the iPad as magical, you know, and you know, using that word dozens of times in the presentation. Introducing the event. I totally get that, and I think it's brilliant. But I hate the name Magic Mouse, and I hate the name Magic Trackpad. Just hate it. Yeah. I hate it. I think it's the stupidest name ever.
You know, it totally works. Magic Bus, but Magic Trackpad, not so much.
I love the Who. I love the Who. A Magic Hat. If you're a magician, you should probably have a Magic Hat.
That's true. Okay.
I love Harry Potter.
So you need a magic wand?
You need a magic wand. You know, if you're going to cast a magic spell, you should probably use magic. But I do not like Magic Trackpad, and I do not like Magic Mouse. I hate those names.
You know,
hate
I'm wondering.
Those names.
Yeah, I'm not particularly fond of them either. And I'm wondering if Apple somehow managed to, in a fit of weakness, kind of work themselves into a corner with the name, because they had to give up the Mighty Mouse name, and so they went with Magic Mouse, which sounds similar to Mighty Mouse.
It's got the same alliteration.
Yes, and so I'm wondering if once they did that, they realized, oh crap, we've kind of done a branding thing here, and No, we're going to have to kind of stick with it.
I think someone at Apple actually likes the name, and you know, which is good for them, I guess. I mean,
do you think it might be Steve Jobs? I'm wondering.
Well, I'm sure he had final approval.
That's true. And wasn't it? What was the name he came up with for the iMac before it was the iMac? It was like Mac-Man or something. It was a horrible, horrible name. So
I don't remember.
Whatever the name that Steve wanted for the iMac was really bad. So I
only vaguely remember that anecdote, actually.
So I know it as an anecdote, and so for sake of argument, we'll just say it's truth for now, even though we don't really know. So, because sometimes
ladies
I climb.
And gentlemen, that's the Context Machine in a nutshell.
Occasionally, I climb upon your throne of judgment, and
excellent.
Yes, and the air smells nice.
There's room for
up
both
here.
Of us up here as we survey the domain upon which we shall pronounce judgment.
And it has a nice view too. It really does.
It does. Hence,
all right. So, for the sake of this
the domain.
So for the sake of this argument, I'm assuming that's true. And so if so, then Steve Jobs has already shown a propensity to push product names that aren't very good. And so hence Magic Mouse and now Magic Trackpad.
I hated iPod when it was first announced. I thought it was ridiculous. And I was clearly wrong about that. It was a great name. It was a great marketing name. Apple has done fantastic things with it. The iPhone stemmed from that. The iPad, I think, is going to be perceived as a great name too. And you know, maybe I'm wrong about the Magic Trackpad. I'm okay with being wrong on it. It just drives me nuts. I don't know. Do you think, by the way, is this going to be the name that they start marketing? Because remember, they just applied for this week. This isn't something from like 2 years ago. Just now surfaced.
I don't think they're actually going to use the name, which means that since I have now said that, they actually will, and someone will call me on it later. But I don't think they're actually going to use Magic Trackpad. I think they're actually protecting the name because they're going to stick with the Magic Mouse name, and they don't want someone to try and rip off the name in essence and create another product that could potentially be seen as something Apple's making.
Well, okay, so the company does, however, have patents governing the multi-gestures and multi-touch technologies that they're using in both the Magic Trackpad, the iPhone, the iPad, and the trackpads. I'm sorry, the Magic Mouse is what I meant to say, and the trackpads that it's using on its portable lines. And I could see Apple wanting to be able to refer to its own trackpads as Magic Trackpad, but I could also sort of see Apple being so enamored with the concept of multi-touch and multi-gestures that it does release a standalone trackpad so that people can use their desktop computers in somewhat the same way that they're using these mobile devices.
You know,
so I can kind of see I can see it going either. I can also see the company just getting the trademark to keep anyone else from using it. So I can see all three possibilities, and I don't really have a strong feeling as to which is right.
The one possibility you tossed out that I don't think is going to happen is a standalone trackpad. And the reason that I will give you for that is because we have the Magic Mouse. So we already have the multi-touch surface pointing device.
I know it's not the same. It doesn't do, you know, and there's certainly an argument that could be made that the Magic Mouse is the Magic Trackpad.
Well, there's no reason why Apple couldn't expand what you do with the Magic Mouse so that the surface on the top is even more like using a traditional trackpad than it is today.
Because right now, you basically can use the top for gesture control only. You can't really use the top for pointing, if I remember correctly.
Right, but there's no reason why Apple couldn't change that.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to use a curved surface.
You wouldn't. Okay, so here's what I think will happen. If Apple does not make a trackpad with a Magic name in it, we will see more multi-touch support added to the Magic Mouse through a software update. It will still point like a traditional mouse where you move it on a surface, but you'll be able to do a lot more with gestures on the top as well. And I think that's what Apple's going to leave us with as their pointing device that's not built into their computers.
All right. Well, so just to kind of throw another devil's advocate thought into this process. I do think that Apple is quite taken with the notion that gestures are the next generation of computer interface control.
I would agree with you.
So if that's the case, if Apple does feel strongly about gestures being the next generation of interface controls, I think that it is certainly possible for the company to want to again allow me to control my iMac or my Mac Pro in the same way that I would control my MacBook, my MacBook Pro, or my iPad, or my iPhone.
Okay, so if Apple did that, I would speculate that the actual mouse product, the Magic Mouse we have today, would be discontinued. And the reason I toss that out is because Steve Jobs has shown that he doesn't like to have complex product lineups.
That's true.
So we'd end up with two different pointing devices. And which one do people choose?
It's true.
So I think if that happens, we'd end up with one or the other, but not both.
Yeah, maybe. And unfortunately, whichever one we wind up with, even if it's one, both, one or both, or the other. There we go. One, both, or the other. It unfortunately will have the name Magic in it, and that'll put me on tilt.
It will. And you know what? I'm actually kind of okay with that because...
I think Apple's okay with that too.
Yeah.
With me being on tilt. I don't really think they care.
Well, see, the reason I like having stuff come up every now and then that puts you on tilt is because it's fun to get you ranting in the context machine.
Wind him up and watch him go.
That's right. You know, it's... Yeah. So, yes, having a magic whatever product in Apple's lineup is totally fine with me because from a totally selfish standpoint, I love watching you rant all this stuff.
Thanks, man.
Hey, sure thing.
Alrighty, so let's thank our sponsor again, GoToAssist Express at GoToAssist.com/machine and wind up this week's episode.
I think it's about time for that. So, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send us your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at tmobrian. That's twitter.com/tmobrian. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And our theme song is Push Me Under by the Atomic Love Bombs. That's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
drops reminds me of my shame. On it still I cannot go. We're trapped by lies that we don't know. I can't see.